You guys, so this is my inaugural episode of my new series, which is going to be called Flickers of Fear. It's kind of like a companion series, I guess, to my Tomes of Terror, where I review, horror books. I figured that we really needed to do more movie reviews just because I have so many ones that you guys have sent, and I have so many ones like in that have been recommended, and I really need to get to them all. And, you know, Tom and I together just doing one old movie a week and then a couple of new ones just wasn't really cutting it. I felt like I was really getting behind and I didn't really want to have to get him involved in stuff that, you know, or watching some movies that he wasn't really all that interested in because, you know, I like a lot of movies that he's not really into, particularly in the horror genre. So I was like, well, instead of doing the Witching Hour show, which I used to do on Thursdays, I think I'll kind of discontinue that, at least as a weekly enterprise, and I'll start doing a couple of movie reviews every week just so I can get caught up on all of the, you know, the backlog of movies that I want to see and that, like I said, that you guys have since, you know. So that's what I decided to do. I think I'm going to post these on Thursday and Saturdays, probably. The Thursday one will be like a newer film, just like we would do on the matinee. And the Saturday one is probably going to be an older film, you know, anywhere from silent films into, you know, the 80s or 90s or whatever. So that's kind of how I'm going to do it. Not going to have any particular, you know, order the way I do them or anything. It's just kind of whatever old movie and whatever new movie I watched that week and felt like talking about. So that's pretty much how it's going to be from here on out. So for my first one, I decided to do this one that a lot of people have recommended to me and that I had actually been wanting to see for quite a while, but I had just never kind of sat down and watched it because, you know, it's kind of long and it's kind of a time commitment, but I had really, really been wanting to see it. So finally, I sat down one afternoon and just sat there and watched it. And that is the 2018 The House That Jack Built, directed by Lars von Trier. Now, I don't know how familiar you guys are with the work of Lars von Trier. He's kind of, you know, in cinema circles, he's actually very well known as sort of a provocateur, I guess. A lot of his movies are very controversial and cause like a lot of polarized sort of reactions to them, which is kind of what he's going for. He's Danish, by the way. I'm not a huge expert on his stuff. I have seen 3 or 4 of his movies, now that I'm thinking about it. I saw Dogville, which I loved. I saw Antichrist, which I also loved. It wasn't as shocking as I was expecting, I guess, because it had so much of a reputation around it. And then I saw it probably a year or two after it came out on DVD. And I was like, you know, that I thought it was a beautiful movie. And it did have some shocking scenes in it, but I didn't find it as shocking as maybe some people. I don't know if that's just because I'm jaded or whatever. And I've also seen Dancer in the Dark. I might have seen Melancholia, but I kind of doubt it because I'm sure I would have remembered it. So I've seen 3 of his other movies. So I kind of know, and I've liked them. So I kind of know what I'm in for. I know that a lot of his films are just intended to provoke a particular reaction, whether that's to make people angry or to make people outraged or just to be shocking or violent for the sake of it, which is kind of a simplistic way of going about it. But, you know, that's kind of his deal. And he just doesn't really like, I mean, from what I can understand, very famously, when he won, I believe he won the Palme d'Or for Dancer in the Dark, and he was kind of mad about it because he was like, well, that means that I had to get this many votes. And I don't think that he really likes to be popular or likes to make movies that are seen to be popular that a lot of people like. I think he is happier when he's being provocative, you know what I mean? When he's being shocking. I think if he thinks too many people like it, then that means that it was too safe or something like that. So with all that context, I kind of go into The House That Jack Built, which is nominally a horror movie. I guess you could call it a horror movie. It's kind of, you know, it follows a serial killer. And there's a lot of really intense gore and violence in it. That said, I'm not really sure. I've read like a kind of a panoply of reviews about it, and some of them kind of got this and some of them not. To my mind, as I was watching it, maybe, am I weird? I don't know. I thought it was hilarious. It's a black comedy. Further than that, I think it's a black comedy where Lars von Trier is essentially making fun of himself, making fun of his own pretensions, you know, in a way that it's very, you know, I think that he has a reputation for being very egotistical and self-aggrandizing. But in this one, it seems like he's lampooning that. And to me, it seemed that was kind of obviously what he was going for. Maybe everybody didn't get that reading out of it, but to me, that's very much what it seemed like. I mean, to me, it seemed like it's very dark and gruesome, but it's also very, very, very funny. And you can tell that the main character, Jack, played by Matt Dillon, is not supposed to be a hero or an anti-hero. You're not supposed to like him. You're supposed to, the movie is kind of making fun of him in a way. At least that's how I interpreted it. So I actually have to say this, I don't know, this might be, I'd have to see Dogville and Antichrist and stuff like that again, but this might be my favorite of all the Lars von Trier films that I have seen. It looks beautiful. It's hilarious. You know, the gore is disturbing, but I didn't find it that shocking. I mean, you know, I watch a lot of horror movies, so it really takes a lot before I'm just like, oh man, let's not go there. So this one now, I do, the version that I saw is actually on Hulu at the moment. So I assume that this is the edited version, because there was, you know, a director's cut that was what was shown at Cannes. And that was actually shown, I think, for one night, like an unlimited theatrical release back in 2018 when this came out. You know, so I think that some people are saying that that one was like super gruesome and that one was just way over the top. But from my understanding, I don't think a great deal of it was taken out. I think there were, you know, maybe a few seconds here, like trimmed here or there in some of the murder scenes, particularly I think the one incident that had to do with the girl Jacqueline, who he called Simple, you know, and him cutting her breasts off. I think they showed more of that in the director's cut. So, like I said, I'm assuming that the one on Hulu is not the director's cut. So, you know, your mileage, babe, maybe it is like way, way more, way more gruesome. But from what I understand, they didn't take a great deal of it out. Even if they, I don't know, I just don't think the violence against, you know, the violence in the movie probably wouldn't have bothered me, because like I said, it takes a really, really lot of violence in a movie before I'm just like, oh man, I can't watch that. I'm actually more, you know, as most of you know, I'm actually a lot more sensitive to, you know, simulated violence, again, well, real violence, obviously, that goes without saying, but simulated violence in movies against animals. So I will say that the most memorably upsetting scene in this one involved a duckling. And if you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. It was so realistic that that was the only scene in the movie where I was just like, oh, bro, did you really have to show that? I mean, you know what I mean? I know it was fake. Well, I hope it was fake. It didn't look fake. I will say that it was very realistic. And that was kind of the only scene that really upset me. So I don't know what that says about me, but you know. So what is this movie about? It does have sort of a narrative to it, but as with most of his other films, you know, it's very experimental. Some people would say like arty farty, which it is, but I think it's also, it's still pretty accessible, I think. You know, maybe not to like just a general audience, but you know, to people who are more into cinema and stuff like that, I don't think it's all that off-putting. I mean, at least from my point of view, I don't know. Like I say, I'm just, because I'm into horror movies, so maybe it doesn't bother me as much. So, as I said, Matt Dillon plays a serial killer, only known as Jack. And he is basically telling about five incidents over his 12-year killing spree. Because apparently he killed 60 people, you know, in the 70s and 80s. So he is telling about five random incidents that he chose from his back catalog, I suppose. And he's telling this to what is clearly an old man. You only hear the voice at first. The voice is Bruno Ganz, by the way, who was also in Nosferatu, the 1979 one, who he only calls Verge. But as it goes on, it becomes very blindingly obvious that this is the metatext of this, if you want to call it that. The overarching story of this is Dante's Divine Comedy, where Virgil is, you know, leading Dante down into the underworld, you know, down the nine levels of hell or whatever. So that's kind of, so keep that in mind while you're watching this. Like I said, it's not like he's subtle about it or anything like that. I mean, if you know anything about classical literature, you know, or anything like that, then it will be pretty obvious, like right from the outset, what's going on. So essentially, they're going down the nine circles of hell, and Matt Dillon is, or, you know, Jack, obviously, is telling Virgil about all of these different murders that he committed, and they are portrayed. The interesting thing about this, and the reason why I say that I think maybe Lars von Trier is poking fun at himself is that it seemed to me very much that the Jack character was meant to be, I mean, I'm not saying that Lars von Trier is a serial killer, obviously, but I think he was written as the director's sort of avatar. And the fact that you have Virgil, these discussions that they have, that you have Virgil kind of pricking holes in Jack's pretensions, I think is the director making fun of himself, making fun of some, you know, some of his views, some of the things that he said. So I really liked that about it. And I thought it was like really interesting and stuff because, you know, as I said, he's kind of a controversial figure. He was actually banned from the Cannes Festival for some questionable comments he made. You know, there's been all kinds of allegations swirling around him being, you know, misogynistic, you know, some sexual assault type or sexual harassment type stuff, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I think that, you know, him being this controversial figure and making these pieces of art that are deliberately meant to provoke you, I think that he's kind of having fun with it almost. And I kind of dug that. I mean, I should mention too that when this was shown at the Cannes Festival, and as I said, he had been banned from the Cannes Festival, so they let him show it, but he couldn't show it like in the competition. You know what I mean? Like he couldn't get a prize for it or anything. This will give you an idea is that at the Cannes screening, about 100 people got up and walked out, you know, because they just couldn't take it. They were disgusted and they thought it was vile. But after the movie was over, Lars von Trier got a 10-minute standing ovation. So that should tell you the kind of shit that you're dealing with here. And pretty much like, I think most of his films engender that kind of a reaction. Because the thing about it is, I feel like there's some kind of a debate to be had over whether he intentionally shocks people just for the sake of shocking them, which I think he does. Now, I think that if that's all your art does, I'm not saying you shouldn't do it or that it should be banned or anything like that. I just don't know if it, you know, would have anything more to say if that's all that you're doing. But I don't think that's the case with Lars von Trier. Yes, I do think that he's deliberately trying to provoke a reaction with his work. Yes, I do think that he's deliberately trying to be shocking and trying to upset people on purpose. But I do think that he's doing it for a reason. I don't think he's just doing it because he can or, you know what I mean? He definitely does seem like he has something to say, as weird as whatever, as what that is. So I definitely would argue that, yes, this has some vile imagery in it, but I do think it serves a purpose. You know what I'm saying? I don't think it's shocking just for the sake of it. Like I said, I'm not a huge, you know, expert on his work or anything like that, but I have seen some of his films and I do know of his reputation somewhat. So the fact that he made a movie like this, I just found it really, really interesting. And like I said, it's really beautiful to look at. It's shot really cool and everything like that. So you go through these incidents. The first incident, Jack, who is an engineer, but he had actually, I guess he says in there that he had actually wanted to be an architect. So the whole overarching narrative of the house that Jack built being that he keeps coming back to, he had bought this plot of land because he had an inheritance from his parents. We don't know, presumably, but he had this big inheritance, so he didn't really need to, you know, work, or he could kind of do what he wanted to a large extent. So he had bought this piece of land and spent all these years working on his perfect house, and they show him like working on the models. But then it kept happening that he would build it partly and then it just wasn't coming out the way he wanted. So he would like bulldoze it and then he would start over. So like over the years, it's become kind of like this albatross that's hung around his neck where it's like every time he gets the house partially built, something happens. He's just like, I don't like it. And then he has to, you know, bulldoze it and start over. So that's kind of all going on in the background while he's talking about these incidents. And like I said, the movie is in kind of five parts, which are called incidents. And then there's a sixth part, which is like epilogue, and it's called katabasis, if I'm pronouncing that right, which is like a Greek word. And it means like descent. What does it mean? Descent toward the darkness or something, or ascent toward the light? I can't remember, but it's something like that. It's, you know what I mean? It's you know, going along with the whole, you know, Divine Comedy theme. So in the first incident, which stars Uma Thurman, by the way, Jack is driving his little red murder van down kind of a lonely road. And he comes across Uma Thurman's character And her car has broken down, or she's got a flat tire or something like that, and her jack is broken. So first she asks him to borrow his jack, and which his name is Jack too, which is just kind of funny. And he doesn't have one. So basically he's like, well, I can drive you to this dude. He's a blacksmith. He's like 5 miles up the road. He can fix the jack for you, and then you can fix the car yourself. Like, I don't have time for this shit or whatever. Now, while they're driving to the blacksmith, their pretty much entire discussion, which is mostly just her talking, is her talking about, wow, this is like the perfect situation for you to be a serial killer and you to murder me and like leave my body out here in the woods and nobody would ever find me and all this other kind of stuff. And the funny thing about it is that for a long time, she keeps going on like that and he doesn't do anything. Like, he doesn't kill her. He takes her to the blacksmith. They get the jack fixed. He drives her back to her car. You know, she then the jack breaks again. And, you know, so they have to go back and forth a few times. And she is super, super annoying. So finally, she just keeps sort of taunting him, saying, oh, you know, you couldn't be a serial killer. You too much of a wimp or something like that. And finally, he just like, you know, crushes her face in with the jack and then puts her in the freezer that he keeps for the purpose. So that's like the first incident. Now, the second incident, he goes to this woman's house. And again, it's kind of remote. It's like out in the country. And he goes to the door and he gives her this cockamamie story about being a cop. She doesn't believe it. And then he finally, it's just this really funny, like awkward situation because she's obviously like really distrustful. But he just like keeps there. Yeah, I'm a cop and I don't have my badge because it's at the silversmith and it's being shined up and stuff. And she's just like, what the fuck are you even talking about? So finally he's like, oh, okay, well, you know, that's good. That's good that you didn't let me in. I'm actually not a cop. I'm an insurance agent. Cause he sees something on her wall that says that her husband was, died in the line of duty or something like that. And, he's like, I'm an insurance agent. I could get you like all this, like double your pension and stuff. And finally she lets him in and he ends up, killing her. And the thing that happens in this one that is also very, you know, darkly hilarious is that at this point he's telling Virgil that he has really bad OCD and that during this particular murder, he killed the woman and then he cleaned everything up. And he put her in the van or behind the van at first. I'll get into that in a minute. But then even though he heard like police sirens coming in the distance, he kept having these recurring visions. Like he would go out and sit in the van like and get ready to go. And then he would have these visions that, oh, my God, there was this like this puddle of blood like underneath the carpet or there was like or behind a picture or something like that. And he's like, I got to go back in and check. So he kept doing that, like so much so that the cops actually got there. And he had to tell them like this lame ass story, you know, and the cops were kind of dumb and they believed him. And then it ended up that he had the body of the woman like tied behind the truck, like on a rope. And then it left this blood trail like all the way to his body storage facility. But then rain came and washed it away, which made him feel like, you know, maybe I don't know if he necessarily said something like, you know, that means God says it's OK, because that was like divine intervention. That's like, so I didn't get caught. One theme of this movie, like through all these incidents, and you have to understand too that these incidents are being told from his point of view. So I was assuming that he was an unreliable narrator. He was making himself look better and making his victims and the cops look dumb and incompetent. You know what I'm saying? So it was a very self-aggrandizing narrative because as you go through the movie, it seems very clear that Jack has a philosophy that his murders are akin to great art. And so there's a lot of discussions between him and Virgil, him trying to justify the murders that he's done. And as I said, being very self-aggrandizing and arguing for murder as an art form. You know what I mean? And like I said, that sounds ridiculous, but that's because it is. This is a dark comedy. And I think that's kind of what he was going for. And like I said, he's not supposed to be a heroic character or even an anti-heroic character. He's supposed to be an idiot who thinks these ridiculous things, who doesn't realize that he's an idiot that thinks ridiculous things. I mean, that was what I got out of it. To me, it seemed very obvious that that's what the character was supposed to be. I mean, obviously he was kind of like a moron and he thought all these stupid things, but he thought he was this great artist who was saying something really profound, like with his murders. He even, after the second murder, he decides he needs like a real like a brand or like a name for himself. So he starts calling himself Mr. Sophistication, for fuck's sake. So then you have this other incident, the third one, which seems like this one is pretty upsetting too, I'm gonna say. This is one where I guess it was a woman he was dating, and she had two kids who are just called George, and then the other one's called Grumpy. I don't think they ever say what his name is. That's just what the mom calls him. And he takes them out hunting and is showing them how to use shotguns or whatever. And not surprisingly, ends up blowing them all away. So if you don't want to see little kids getting shot, then maybe you might want to avoid this. Like I said, also, if you don't want to see something really bad happening to a duckling, you might not want to watch this either. I'm not going to lie. Some of the shit in this is kind of upsetting. It is kind of hard to watch. So if you're kind of sensitive to that kind of thing, I wouldn't advise it, because this movie is supposed to upset you. I mean, that's essentially what it is. So if you don't want to be upset, then don't watch it. So that's all I'm saying. So there was that. And then, so he kills the mom and the two little boys and kind of poses them. And then the fourth incident, which probably is the one that got, I feel like that was the one that got the most flack about being misogynistic and everything. But as I said, you know, because Jack says some very like baldly misogynistic things during this particular incident, you know, like, oh, you know, men are born guilty and women are always victims. It's so much easier. And he just says stuff like this to this girlfriend that he has, that he's been emotionally and presumably physically abusing as well. And as I said, he ends up cutting her boobs off is what he ends up doing. And he takes one of the boobs and like puts it under the windshield of the police car that's nearby. And again, that's another kind of thread running through this, is that he almost seems like somebody, you know, somebody in higher authority wanted me to do this because I was doing these things out in plain sight and there were no consequences. Like, I was just getting away with stuff. Even when I tried to get caught, nobody could catch me. So it's almost kind of like he thought that he had the divine right to do it somehow. I don't think he uses those words, but I think that that's kind of what his line of thinking was. In the fifth incident, this is supposed to be his kind of masterwork, I guess. He has kidnapped all of these guys, and by this point he has like a whole shit ton of frozen bodies like in his freezer, but he's kidnapped a bunch of dudes and they're alive in there, and he wants to put them, he has them all tied to this kind of, you know, post or whatever, and he wants to shoot them all through the head with using one bullet. So then there's this almost farcical kind of thing where he thinks that he bought a box of ammunition that was Full Metal Jacket, because that was the only thing that would go through all of the heads. And then he opens the box and one of the victims, like Larry, says, that one's not Full Metal Jacket. They gave you the wrong thing. And then he has to go back to the gun store. And it's just like this ridiculous, ridiculous scene. And I don't know. It's like, maybe I'm a bad person, but like, to me, that was just so, so funny. I mean, it was just, like I said, it's black humor. I mean, it's very, very, very dark humor, but I don't know. I kind of like that. So I just thought it was really funny. So that was the fifth incident. And that is when he met up with Virgil, who is played by Bruno Ganz, as I said earlier. And he actually turns up in the freezer and he says, hey, I've been watching you all this time. And they essentially are going to go down to the underworld. And that's kind of when he's going to tell him all the stuff that he's been telling him. So this whole movie is essentially a flashback. Now, one thing, they actually do kind of go back to this whole house metaphor, because it does turn out that because he couldn't build a regular house and he kept messing it up and he kept having to start over, basically he's like, oh no, my masterwork now, I just figured it out, is I'm going to build a house out of all these frozen corpses that I had in my, so he does that. So he builds this house. When the cops finally come, he runs in there, and that's when he goes down into the underworld. So then during the epilogue, which is gorgeous, I mean, it looks like, I just love the way the epilogue is shot. It looks like those old, you know, medieval paintings and woodcuts and stuff, just the way it's just the cinematography is just, you know, amazing in it. So they go down like through all these circles and all this stuff is like, all these tableaus are recreated. It's really, really cool. And so while they're going down there, finally, you know, and he's been telling Virgil the shit all along. And then finally, Virgil tells him, you know, they come to this broken bridge, you know, over the abyss of hell, you're presuming. And he's like, so, you know, where does that go over there? Like past, you know, the broken part of the bridge. He's like, oh, yeah, well, it used to be, you know, you used to be able to get across the bridge. That's like the stairway to heaven over there, essentially. So Jack is kind of, you know, arrogant to the end. Jack is kind of like, well, has anybody ever tried to climb around these rock walls and gotten over there, like to the other side, like to, because I think I should go to heaven because I'm such an amazing artist. Look at all the profound work that I produced. And so Virgil's basically like, well, you can try it if you want to. And he does try it. And it doesn't go so well. But yeah, so as I said, this is definitely not a movie for everybody. It is, if you like arty farty kind of cinema, or if you like really, really weird horror films or really, really, really gruesome dark comedies, this might be your jam. If you like some of his other movies, then probably you should check this one out. I think this one is probably my favorite one, at least of the ones that I've seen. And like I said, that's not all that many. But it just has such a funny, it has a beautiful look to it. I love all the Dante's Inferno stuff. I love the humor of it. It was just so, I mean, some of the stuff in it was just so absurd to me. It was just, I don't know. It just really, really made me laugh like a whole bunch of times. So like I said, maybe that makes me a bad person. I don't know. If you think, and like I said, just a little bit of a content warning, the violence is quite gruesome. There is a very, very upsetting scene involving a duckling, which, like, you know, obviously you can do whatever you want to humans in movies, like, you know what I mean, you know, as long as it's fake. Obviously I don't want to see real shit, but don't do something to animals, man. Even if it's fake, it really, really bothers me. And this one really bothers. So weirdly, like all the violence against humans, like even like shooting little kids and stuff like that, the movie, it's like that didn't really bother me as much. It kind of bothered me, but not that much. But the scene with the duckling, I was just kind of like, oh, no. Oh, and I just didn't want to watch it. But yeah, so if that's going to upset you, just I'm just warning you right now that that's where it is. But overall, I actually really, really loved this movie. So it's one of those things, like, your mileage may vary. All of his movies are kind of like that. They're either kind of love him or hate him. But I just thought it was a very, very funny. It's a little long, I will say that. It's about 2.5 hours, 2 hours, 32 minutes, something like that. It didn't seem that long to me, but I can see how some people might think that it gets too bogged down in all of his kind of philosophical discussions about the nature of art and icons. And there's a whole sequence where he talks about how good, you know, evil people like Hitler and stuff like that were at producing art because, you know, they produce so much death and so much iconic imagery. So there's a lot of that in there. So there's like a lot of philosophical waffling. But as I said, I think that's kind of all in service to Lars von Trier, you know, taking the wind out of his own sails a little bit, poking fun at himself a little bit, because in that sequence where they're talking about like Nazi concentration camps and they're talking about all the, you know, all these other horrific tragedies and, you know, Holocausts and things, he also inserts images from his own former movies. So it's almost kind of like he's trying to link his own work with that, but also like making fun of the fact that he's doing that. You know, if that makes any sense, I'm not really sure. So this is on Hulu right now. Like I said, I'm pretty sure it's not the unrated version. It's the R-rated version. I don't know exactly how much was cut out of the R-rated version. I imagine it was just, you know, a few seconds trimmed here and there, like, so it wasn't excessively violent, but this still is pretty violent and pretty, you know, upsetting if you're not going to like that kind of thing. But I don't know. I really dug it. I thought it was pretty entertaining in a bizarre way. Check it out if that's the kind of thing that you're into. And I'll see you on the next one. Bye.